This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. Friday night special. That's right, it's Friday night and it's special. Does the name Brian Walsh ring a bell? I will never forget it. I actually remember his wife better, Anna Walsh. Her body has never been found, and she leaves behind two little boys to grow up without mommy. Remember husband Brian and all of his damning computer searches, like how long does it take for a dead body to start smelling? Yes, him, idiot, on top of being an alleged killer. That said, the owner of the home where young mom Anna Walsh was allegedly murdered is now suing Brian Walsh's mother. Yeah. It just never ends. Not only that, is the judge getting off the case? I'm Nancy Grace. This is Crime Stories. I want to thank you for being with us. Let's start with the owner of the home where Anna Walsh was allegedly killed, now suing Brian Walsh's mother. Recall Brian Walsh allegedly kills and dismembers his beautiful wife, Anna. Well, the owner of that Cohasset home where that allegedly occurred is suing Brian Walsh's mother for $400,000, claiming the murder and police investigation has damaged and, quote, psychologically impacted the property. How do you psychologically impact the property, the home itself, the yard? I don't know if anybody wants to ever buy the home, but how is the home psychologically impacted? Well, that said, the homeowner, Peter Capizzelli, filed the lawsuit against Walsh's mother, Diana Walsh, in Norfolk Superior Court. He is also suing the Property Insurance Underwriting Association for $400,000, claiming it wrongfully denied him coverage. Now, according to this complaint, Diana Walsh, the mom, signed a six-month lease, okay, on the property, later extending the lease. She allegedly told the owner, Capizzoli, she planned to live in the home with son Brian, the daughter-in-law Anna, and their three children. The following January, when Anna's disappearance hit the headlines, police soon accused Brian Walsh of foul play, heavily leaning on those suspicious Google searches. Oh, and did I mention he purchased hundreds of dollars of cleaning products and hardware supplies in the days that followed? That includes a hacksaw and a hatchet. Oh. Police say they found some of Anna's belongings in a dumpster, and they found a bloody, damaged knife in the basement of that Cohasset home. Now, in this complaint, the murder caused, quote, blood and human remains to contaminate the home, including the bedroom where the murder took place and the basement where the dismemberment, oh, Lord have mercy, allegedly took place. This is in the lawsuit. And the homeowner says he had to bring in a company that specializes in murder scene decontamination at, quote, substantial expense. He claims the investigation damaged the property with blood-detecting chemical luminol staining the walls, mattresses, furniture, commodes, sinks, and showers. Okay. He also says that because of the publicized murder, the property has now been, quote, psychologically impacted and substantially decreased its rental and sales value. Wow. Well, the mom responds, Diana Walsh, and she denies ever living there and says she was not listed as a guarantor. And if Capizzoli sustained damages, they were caused by acts over which she, the mom, Diana Walsh, had no control. Okay, we'll see where that lands. Oh, P.S. The mom also files a counterclaim, can you believe this, claiming the property did not comply with sanitation codes and was filled with mold when they moved in. Interesting how she only figured that out after the murders. Okay. In addition to all of that, the judge in the case is now citing a potential conflict. Is she going to be taken off the case? Judge Diane Frenier informed all the parties she has a pre-existing friendship with attorney Michael Sullivan, who was recently added to help the prosecution handle federal material related to this case. She describes him as a mentor and former co-worker. She also says she can remain objective, but offered to let Walsh and his defense attorney consider whether they want a new judge. Wow. Okay, let me jog your memory. Take a listen to our friends at WPRI.
39-year-old Anna Walsh left her home early Sunday morning. She was supposed to take a flight from Logan to D.C., where she works during the week, but there's no record of her ever boarding a flight. Police say there's been reports that she took a rideshare. There's also been no electronic footprint of her in 5 days.
Okay, all this starts in Cohasset in Norfolk County, Massachusetts. With me, an all-star panel to make sense of what we know right now. Before I introduce them all, I want to go to a special guest, Dana Kennedy, senior reporter with my favorite newspaper, the New York Post. Dana, thank you for being with us. This just is, it's really hard for me to believe, from everything I know about Anna Walsh, that she would leave her three little boys alone. I mean, have you looked at photos of her? There's not really a lot of photos of her and her family, but she always seems so connected to the children.
She did seem connected to the children, Nancy. At the same time, I felt it was a little bit strange. She got this new job in Washington, D.C., and she had like a small apartment.
Okay, wait. Dana Kennedy, you happen to have a lot of information, and you're like the fire hydrant of news. It just comes out so fast. I like to make flow charts, right? And I can't really write that quickly. Now, hold on. New job. What was new job?
Her new job was as a real estate executive with a Washington, D.C. based firm.
Hold on. You know what? I knew she was in real estate. And that she's fairly successful, but I didn't know it was a new job. Now, let me think that through. So she's living in Cohasset, and the job, is it based in D.C., or does she just have to go there occasionally?
It's based in D.C.
Ugh. Okay. That's tough. Even though that's not a long trip, Dana, you're familiar with the, I call it the second LaGuardia, where there is an airport that just does shuttles. They do from LaGuardia, New York to D.C.
Right.
They used to do one from LaGuardia to Boston. It's really quick. And the only flights leaving the Marine Terminal, as it was called, are just those couple of few cities. And it's like a hop, jump, and a skip. So is that true from Cohasset? I guess you take the Boston airport to D.C. How far is that of a flight?
It's only about an hour. I mean, I actually come from Massachusetts, and one of the towns involved is my hometown in this case. It's really only an hour flight, but it's at least an hour from Cohasset to Logan Airport.
Yep.
And, you know, once you get to Washington, D.C., it's, you know, you have to get into the city. So it's a hot jump, but it still takes time.
You know, that's so true about every trip. You think, oh, it's just an hour flight. But by the time you leave early to get to the airport an hour or two early, so, you know, in case there are lines, by the time it's all said and done, it's like 4 or 5 hours, no matter how you slice the bread.
At least.
I'm just thinking about her. So now her new job is based in D.C. Would she go for the whole week?
Yes.
Well, who's taking care of the boys while she's gone for the week?
The husband.
That's a big stress on a marriage and a family leaving. You're going to laugh, Dana. I swear, if I go one night, and I don't think I'm the most critical person in the family, but when I'm gone one night, I come home, the whole house looks like bears have been living there. I look in the children's backpacks, and they're full of, like, trash. I ask what they have for supper, as if I didn't know it's going to be pizza. That's no vegetables, Dana, at all. Okay, well, apparently they had it worked out. So she leaves the house that morning?
Well, we don't know. That's what he said.
Okay, that's what the hubby says. Tell me about Cohasset, where they lived.
Cohasset is a really pretty high-end seaside town, pretty posh. And they were living in a rental because the house they'd had before actually burned down.
Now, hadn't they already moved out of it when it caught on fire?
Yes.
And some other people were living there? That's just another wrinkle in this case. So we've got this gorgeous, and I mean gorgeous, 39-year-old mom, Anna Walsh, with three boys, ages 2, 4, and 6. She just takes a new real estate job, but she has to travel to get there. What was her job before that, Dana?
She was basically in hospitality, Nancy. She started off really low level, almost as a cleaning lady, according to some of my sources. However, she graduated pretty quickly to hotels, like hotels in Western Massachusetts and around that area.
Can I tell you something? Everybody on the panel, and Dr. Bethany Marshall is going to love this. Also with me, in addition to Dana Kennedy, senior reporter with New York Post. And it's a real honor to have you, Dana. Dr. Bethany Marshall joining me, psychoanalyst out of Beverly Hills at drbethanymarshall.com and star of Bling Empire on Netflix. Dr. Bethany, I tracked down a friend of Anna's, and this is how he met her. He and his son would often visit the grandmother, his mother, in Boston. And at that time, Anna, for years, was working at a high-end hotel in Boston, and that is where Frank and his son Henry would always stay. And Anna would handle their reservation and whatever they needed while they were there, and she took a particular liking to Henry, the little boy, the son. And she would always give him special treats and recommend things for them to do in Boston when they weren't with the mother, Miss Huller. And over the years, they became really good friends. And she would go out of her way to do things for Frank, who's a single dad, trying to take care of his son. And she really made a huge impact, not only on him and his son, but other people in the hotel too. And that really gave me an insight into her after many, many discussions with Frank about her, because she didn't know them and she didn't know the little boy, but went out of her way above and beyond any duty at the hotel just to be genuinely kind and welcoming and sincere to people she didn't even know, Dr. Bethany.
You know, Nancy, this is so profound what you're sharing, because she started in 2015 as a recent immigrant, as Dana said, cleaning rooms. And she advanced quickly, which tells me that she's a very hard worker, but hard work did not get in the way of wanting to help others. It tells me that this is a woman who's capable of forming attachments. And that's very important for this story, because it means this is not a mother who just took off, who was unattached to her children, who was unattached to her husband. In fact, going to D.C. for work may have actually been a sacrifice to be away from her family. So this woman is beloved. She cares. She's altruistic. She has family and friends around her. She forms long, long, long-term relationships. Someone like this does not just get in the car and drive away from their family, right? They don't just find another lover and, you know, leave it all, like we see with some mothers who are not even bonded with their children. So they create a new life in secret. This is not Anna Walsh. Anna Walsh cared. Anna Walsh was attached. Anna Walsh was firmly ensconced in a community and in her relationships.
So what do we know about the morning she apparently got a ride share of some sort, Uber or Lyft, to the airport for a trip to D.C. Now, one thing I can tell you is it's on January 1 when most people are off. Take a listen now to our friends at WUSA.
A relative told Cohasset police that the 39-year-old was seen leaving her Massachusetts home around 4 a.m. on January 1st to take a rideshare to Logan Airport in Boston.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. It never ends with Brian Walsh. Now his mother is being sued because she apparently rented the home where the murder and the disposal of Anna's body allegedly took place. What a mess. You know what? That's a civil lawsuit. I'm more concerned about whether the state can prove a murder.
Is this correct that she had a dinner with friends?
Yes, they had a dinner with one friend.
One friend. Was that in the home or did they go out?
It was in the home.
In the home. Okay, so the friend, did the friend stay overnight?
No, but he has been quoted.
Okay, so we know she was there for New Year's Eve and, okay, Just wanted to back up just a little bit to confirm the timeline. Take a listen to more from WUSA.
3 days after she was seen leaving her home with bags in hand, Walsh was reported missing.
We cannot confirm that she actually got into a rideshare in Cohasset. We can further, we have confirmed with the airlines, and that's been a challenge, that she did not board a plane this week.
Police say her phone has been off and there has been no activity on her credit or debit cards.
I wanted you to take a listen to more of what the friend had to say, but first, I want to go to Ross Gardner, forensic consultant and instructor at BevelGardner.com, author of Bloodstain Pattern Analysis with an Introduction to Crime Scene Reconstruction, third edition. Wow, I like that's the third edition. That means you've got three books that you have revised about crime scene reconstruction, and I could talk to you about bloodstain pattern analysis all day long. Ross Gardner, you're a forensic consultant. Let me ask you this very quickly, if you could put it in a nutshell for everybody that hasn't had to do it. How do you confirm whether someone caught a rideshare from a certain address, and how do you confirm forensically, if you're investigating the case, whether someone took a flight out of Cohasset or out of Boston?
Well, today, in this technology, it's hard to move about without some level of leaving information behind. I think this is basic criminal investigation. They would have contacted the Lyfts and the rideshare people, and they have records. And, of course, you are not going to go through TSA without being recognized unless your claim, you know, somebody were to claim that she were traveling in disguise or under a false name. So I think that was the easiest part of the whole deal for the criminal investigators, just to figure out.
Did she really catch a ride?
Yeah.
And did she really have a flight, or did she ever even have a flight booked? Did she have a flight booked that she didn't catch, or did she not even have a flight booked? You know what this is reminding me of? To Dana Kennedy in New York Post, this name's going to go down in infamy forever. Caitlin Armstrong. She was the glam yoga instructor murdering her boyfriend's friend, Mariah. Remember her? Mariah Wilson, who was a world-class dirt and mud biker who was in town for a competition. And the boyfriend got together with Mariah, you know, for the afternoon. And the next thing you know, she's dead, shot dead in the bathroom. Remember how they finally traced her and found her in, I think, Costa Rica? Was exactly the way Ross Gardner just described: evidence, photos, video at the airport and from TSA.
Absolutely. I covered that story when it happened, and it was incredible that it
you sure did.
They saw her in surveillance video at LaGuardia after she flew out of, I believe, Austin.
Mm-hmm.
But then somehow she was able to get a fake passport, and then she flew out to Costa Rica. It was incredible that she lasted as long as she did. And as we know, I think she had dyed her hair and was making herself look as different as possible.
Had a nose job.
Yeah.
So Ross Gardner is right. I don't know if this young mom ever had a flight arranged, or we just thought she had a flight arranged, but we now know she didn't take a Lyft, she didn't take an Uber, no rideshare or cab. So, all right, where is she? Now we find out there's no activity on her credit or debit cards. So how is she living? When is she reported missing? Take a listen to our friends at Boston 25.
A Cohasset police log is shedding new light on how the investigation first got started. It says a call requesting a well-being check was made on January 4th by a man who identified himself as the head of security at Honor Walsh's employer in D.C., Tishman Speyer. The log says Tishman Speyer contacted husband Brian Walsh before he reported his wife missing. It explains that he told police Anna left for D.C. and he hadn't heard from her since. According to the log, Anna's phone last pinged on January 2nd at 3:14 a.m. in Cohasset and hit the tower on Reservoir Road in Cohasset, less than a mile from the family's home.
Okay, all of that was interesting to me. But Dana, and hey, don't worry, Philip Holloway, I'm getting to you. Philip Holloway with me, high-profile lawyer, founder of the Holloway Law Group in Cobb County, radio host, legal analyst, WSB, host of Sworn, a true crime podcast. I'm getting there, Phil. And remember, Philip, again, I scolded everyone before we went to air. We're not having high tea at Windsor Castle. Jump in, man. You're certainly not afraid of jumping in court. So if you have an idea, jump in. Dana Kennedy, a lot just jumped out at me. But one thing is, her phone pinged January 2 at home when she was supposed to have left the morning of January 1. What, she left without her phone?
Yeah, nothing makes any sense, Nancy. I mean, and if she had, we were talking about flights earlier, had she made an arrangement for a flight, that would have shown up online somewhere.
Okay, to you, Philip Holloway, lawyer and founder of the Holloway Law Group, Cobb County, Georgia. Philip Holloway, why is it her office reported her missing? Shouldn't the husband have reported her missing?
Well, look, anybody who cares about her should have reported her missing. But look, I think this does make perfectly good sense.
Man, I like you. Hey, if my husband ever goes missing, remind me, hire Philip Holloway. Of course, he can't go missing because I've got him on Life 360. I've got him on this and on that. Man, I know when he's going to go empty the trash. Actually, really, he's so trustworthy. When I try to like look through his emails, they're so boring, my eyes bleed. So, you know, I'm actually not tracking him. That said, go ahead, Philip Holloway.
Well, look, I think this whole thing does make perfectly good sense because the picture that's being painted here by the circumstantial evidence.
All I said is he didn't report her missing, man.
Yeah, this could be the most powerful type of evidence in court. Circumstantial evidence is great. And the circumstances paint a picture of someone who has been killed. This is a murder case. We all know where it's going. The circumstances all point to that.
Well, I believe you're putting the cart before the horse.
I don't think so.
Nobody has said murder yet.
I don't think so. I think this is where it's
going.
Oh,
I did. Now, see, are you familiar with William Shakespeare? Because one of my favorite quotes is, "Methinks thou doth protest too much." All I said was he didn't report her missing, and you just went crazy about a circumstantial murder case.
Well, that's what it is. You know, when somebody says this doesn't make sense, I have the position that it makes perfectly good sense. Once you understand that this is a murder case, it starts to make sense. Everything that we know and everything that's happened fits perfectly into that paradigm.
Why didn't he report her missing, Philip Holloway?
Because he's afraid of going to prison.
Okay, well, that's certainly one way of putting it. Now, we have a little, let's just say, inconsistency in the facts. Take a listen to WBZ.
WBZ has obtained and verified audio of a voicemail left by Mr. Walsh for one of Anna's friends. The friend lives in Washington, D.C., where Anna works, and tells us the voicemail was left on Wednesday. That's the same day Anna was reported missing to police.
Good afternoon. It's Brian Walsh. I hope all is going well. I was just reaching out to basically everybody I could. Anna hasn't been in touch for a few days. Do you know anyone that might have that contact with her? Calling everyone. So sorry to bother you. Sure, everything's fine.
Okay. No offense to this guy calling people, but Dana Kennedy, did it sound a little bit like he was reading a script to you?
It sounded a bit like he was reading a script, and also he was completely nonchalant. I mean, in this day and age, when someone's out of touch for 2 days, you'd be in a total panic. You'd be calling every cop. You'd be doing everything possible.
You're so right. Dr. Bethany Marshall, I've told you this story before, but I don't think everybody knows the story. Let me just tell this real quick. David, my husband, travels a lot for his job. And typically when he touches down, he'll text me. And that's great. I don't need to talk to him. I just like to know he's safe. Well, Bethany, Dr. Bethany, one time he got to Florida and he texted, I made it and I'm going to go do this, 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 and this, and then I'll end up at the hotel, you know, around 9 o'clock. Well, you know what? I never heard from him again. And I could just imagine him getting run over in the parking lot or some nut hitting me in the head, or I didn't know what I was thinking. You know, my coworker Dee and I stayed up till 4 o'clock last night, that night, calling hospitals. Finally, I got the manager to go and knock on his door with much, much strong arming. And he was in there and had come home early and fallen asleep. You could hear the TV in the background. He's like totally knocked out. But I was so upset. I was calling every hospital in the area. I didn't know where his business appointments were. So I was trying outlying hospitals. I know I sounded like a crazy person. I was convinced something had happened to him. I sure as heck didn't sound like I was reading a script.
No, exactly. That's what you just took the words right out of my mouth. Compare his response with yours. He had what we call in my field trite, rehearsed, and stereotyped speech. That's what we put in reports when we're analyzing a patient who's sort of hollow and empty and not believable. Also somebody who has very little original thinking. So they spout off or they repeat what they have read somewhere or what they hear other people saying.
I hear you. Let's hear that again, Sydney. Could you play that one more time where we hear Brian Walsh?
WBZ has obtained and verified audio of a voicemail left by Mr. Walsh for one of Anna's friends. The friend lives in Washington, D.C., where Anna works, and tells us the voicemail was left on Wednesday. That's the same day Anna was reported missing to police.
Good afternoon. It's Brian Walsh. I hope all is going well. I was just reaching out to basically everybody I could. Anna hasn't been in touch for a few days. Do you know anyone that might have had contact with her? Calling everyone. So sorry to bother you. Sure, everything's fine.
Okay. So now, guys, take a listen to what police are saying. This is from WUSA.
Walsh's friends and family have been cooperating with detectives. The real estate executive would spend her work weeks in the district and weekends with her family in her Massachusetts home, where local and state officials have broadened their search. Anna Walsh is described as a 5'2" woman weighing 115 pounds. She has brown hair and brown eyes and speaks with an Eastern European accent, according to police.
For now, police say there is no sign of foul play.
No evidence of foul play. Well, maybe this will jog the police into action. A fire erupts. Take a listen to our friends at WCVB.
Police say she wasn't reported missing until Wednesday.
She does work in D.C., and it's not abnormal for her to work long hours and not contact the home.
Investigators say her phone's been off since Sunday, and there's no evidence her credit cards have been used. And the fire at the family's former home only adds to the mystery.
We're going to look at everything here. Very strange coincidence.
Straight back out to veteran trial lawyer Philip Holloway. While police say no evidence of foul play, now a fire breaks out at the home they just moved out of. Do you actually believe in coincidences in criminal law, Philip?
No, not particularly not in this case. Listen, I think that there's certainly circumstantial evidence that can be interpreted as signs of foul play. You know, look, not reporting her missing for a couple of days in and of itself is problematic. And when you add it to all the other pieces of circumstantial evidence, such as leaving the house to buy cleaning supplies and the internet searches and finding the items in the basement.
So not only do we have a fire breaking out at their former home, the picture becomes more bleak. Take a listen to our friends at WBTS.
More bags being brought out of the Cohasset home where missing mom Anna Walsh and her family live just a day after investigators said they wrapped up their search for evidence there. Evidence that included the discovery of blood and a bloody knife in the basement. New video obtained by NBC 10 Boston shows Brian Walsh just one day after his wife was last seen on security cameras at Press Juice Bar in Norwell. Meanwhile, the NBC 10 investigators have learned a hacksaw and bloody towels were found during the search of the transfer station in Peabody and the dumpsters at the Swampscott apartment complex where Brian Walsh's mother lives.
To Dana Kennedy, joining us in the New York Post. I guess, that changed the course of the investigation. What exactly, what evidence has been found so far and where?
I think there's some confusion about that. Early on, the investigators went north of Boston to a place called Peabody, to a transfer station there. They found some material that initially was called evidence or remains, and I don't think it's been specifically outlined at all yet. I don't think they found, like, I believe a bloody knife in the basement.
So a bloody knife, and I believe the knife had been broken to some degree.
Right.
And some blood in the family home, not the former home that was burned down, but the family home where Anna was living with her three boys and husband. And there's more. Listen to NBC10 Boston.
Police have been collecting surveillance video from several places Brian Walsh visited after his wife's disappearance. That includes walking by this dumpster at a liquor store in Swampscott.
They're trying to figure out what exactly happened.
Dr. Anne Marie Myers used to work at the medical examiner's office and now teaches forensic criminology at Anna Maria College. She says authorities will fast track everything they have through the lab, including the hacksaw and the bloody knife. But some of the details could make the police work difficult.
There's an indication that there's been some sort of perhaps dismembering of the body and then disposal. It echoes many cases that I was involved in where the police were never able to find human remains.
Ross Gardner is joining me, forensic consultant. Ross, what does a broken knife mean to you?
Well, it's unclear as to is it's broken or it's damaged, but that would not be unexpected, either through if he used the knife during the course of the assault or in the course of dismembering. Dismembering is not an easy task. I think what's more important at this point will be the DNA. And they're going to have to correlate the knife and those bloodstains that they found specifically in the basement back to Anna. And then, of course, in that sense, there's some belief that he may have cleaned up the scene. We could have high expectation that they're doing additional work such as LCV or luminol, trying to enhance any cleanup activity, because that'll give you a better sense for, you know, is this just a couple tiny little blood stains or was there a large volume of blood here?
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Civil lawsuit or no civil lawsuit, there is a murder case to be tried. These are the facts we know of now.
What can you tell me, Dana Kennedy, about a $450 bill at Home Depot?
Well, when they found the receipt for this, it was cleaning supplies, and I believe there might have been some rope found. But again, pretty suspicious considering his wife is missing.
I've got mops, tarp,
quickly
buckets, various type of tape, and cleaning supplies, all from the Rockland Home Depot. And you know what I love, Philip Holloway, about Home Depot, much like Target? They have excellent surveillance video. I will never forget, I believe it was Target, where Tot Mom Casey Anthony went while her daughter Kelly was missing. There she was in her push-up bra buying beer and all sorts of party stuff, using somebody else's check, by the way, while her daughter was missing. She was not the least bit upset. And I guarantee you there's going to be Home Depot surveillance video of the husband, Brian Walsh, buying all of his cleaning supplies. And not only will they find forensically, as they've already stated, a bloody knife and some blood in the basement, there could be traces of that cleaning supply in the home. And luminol catches so much that the naked eye misses. Any blood spatter, any smudge, any transfer, anything on the wall or the ceiling, A lot of times when defendants murder someone, they forget to look up at the ceiling. That's a big boo-boo, Philip Holloway.
Yeah, it is. And I can't think of an innocent reason for him to be at the Home Depot at that time, in violation of his bond, by the way, purchasing $450 worth of cleaning supplies. If it's not something that he normally does, and there's no information that that is part of his regular routine. So it's just one more brick in the wall when you add it together with all the other circumstantial evidence. And by the way, speaking of a hacksaw, can you imagine any worse thing to be out there, involved in a case like this? If there's a hacksaw involved, that just sends the mind into thinking the absolute worst and most horrifying of outcomes in this case.
And I got to tell you, Dana Kennedy, New York Post, it's not like on Dexter, where the whole floor and the walls are encased in plastic, and then he dismembers the bad guy and then just kind of folds it all up, and you never find any blood spatter at all. It's not like that at all. It's an arduous task. It's very hard to dismember someone. And you always leave behind blood. Plus, you've got to get blood off that hacksaw traced back to Anna, if that's in fact true.
That's right. This is all so incredibly grisly. And I don't know how an everyday average guy, which is what Brian Walsh was, could even figure out how to saw limbs off. I don't think I could.
And there's more, guys. Take a listen to our friend Julianne Lima, Boston 25.
We did confirm through sources that investigators did in fact find evidence in that dumpster that is connected to Anna Walsh's disappearance. Now, they searched the dumpster here in Peabody for hours last night, state and local police. Sources also telling us police towed that dumpster from Brian Walsh's mother's apartment complex in Swampscott. We spoke to people who live in that complex who were horrified to learn of what may have been put in their trash.
And the one in there is automatic. When you close the door, it compacts. It's a scary thing to think about that, because God forbid if somebody put something in there, that compact would compact it.
Back to you, Dana Kennedy. We are just learning that Anna Walsh, age 39, was planning for the future, selling off assets to reinvest in real estate before she vanished on New Year's Day. What, if anything, do we know about that?
Well, we know information about her plans for the future when it came to her business from some tenants that she had in Revere, which is north of Boston, a seaside town. And these tenants had been with her for a while and considered her a friend. I believe they knew her for 7 years. And they were shocked when about a month ago, she said, "Oh, you guys have to get out. I'm selling it." And when they sort of acted like, "Well, can we have some more time?" They said her whole demeanor changed in a way they'd never seen before. She was pushy, they said, not very nice, had a bit of a meltdown over it, and they were shocked. But then another source told Fox News that it was normal for someone who's in like sort of low-level real estate investment to flip and put that money into another investment, which sounds like she did, because it was sold, that Revere Beach home, prior to her disappearance.
What can you tell me, Dana, about some fake Andy Warhol paintings?
Brian Walsh bought them from an LA gallery dealer who believed it. And it wasn't until later that he found out they were completely fake. And Brian Walsh was later arrested in connection with art fraud. That's why he was living in Cohasset with an ankle monitor.
So Brian had an art fraud conviction and was forced by the court to stay at home. But aside from the art fraud, this to me is much more troubling. Take a listen to our Cut 21, our friend Bob Ward.
On social media, missing Cohasset mom Anna Walsh portrayed a glamorous, happy life with her husband, Brian Walsh. But a police report revealed deep trouble even before Anna and Brian were even engaged. According to this public incident report, Anna Knipp, her maiden name, told D.C. Metro Police that Brian Walsh, quote, made a statement over the telephone that he was going to kill her and her friends. She added Brian now lives in Boston, Massachusetts. Brian Walsh is not named in the report, but my sources indicate the suspect here is Brian Walsh. The report lists the potential offense as felony threats, but Anna never cooperated with D.C. Metro Police. Brian Walsh was never charged, and the case was closed.
And not only was that case closed, She then went on to marry him. Dr. Bethany Marshall, can you make sense of that?
Well, yes, absolutely I can, Nancy, because even the most abusive of relationships always start out with an attachment, right? Two people love each other. They want to be together. And according to a cultural anthropologist, Helen Fisher, there's idealization between the couple that lasts for like 7 to 15 months, where they just see each other as perfect and as the person who's going to take care of all their own unmet needs. And it's not until that initial idealization wears off, they start to see the true character of the other person. And then more specifically with women who are abused, there's kind of a crisis of boundaries where when the man is abusive, toxic, in this case, homicidal, the woman thinks, oh, it's my fault. I went to DC. I made him jealous. I posted all these pictures. I shouldn't have done it. And she could have blamed herself, which would then have paved the way for the matching thought, which would be, well, if it's my fault, I have to fix it. And now I just have to go back home and make things better.
Take a listen also to what our friend Lawrence Jones from Fox News and our Cut 13 has learned.
What do you know about Brian?
Unfortunately, not much, because every time when we would have a conversation about Brian, it would be switched to children or brushed off.
What do you mean brushed off? How would the conversation go?
Literally switching the subject. So, and I said, if there is anything, it's okay. And she said, everything is fine.
And more.
Her husband, Brian, had this no picture policy. I mean, it's even hard to find pictures of her out there when we want to remember her life and try to get answers for her. Did y'all hear anything about that? Does that surprise you, this no picture policy?
Hard to say. She was hiding, truly. But the absence of him, I understand that even in New Year's Eve, my friend said that he would not even take personal photos for between friends, that he was missing in the photos during the New Year's Eve, that he would take pictures of everybody else but not of himself. So there must be some reasons for it. I don't want to speculate what the reason, but it is odd.
A no picture policy. Dana Kennedy from the New York Post, there's one very important picture out there right now, his mugshot. He apparently lied to police and he's been charged with impeding the investigation, stating he took his sons for ice cream when in fact, that's not true.
No, it's not true at all. There doesn't seem to be anything really valid that he has said so far. And if I agree with a lot of what Dr. Bethany said in principle, but I think it's very strange still to file a police report or make a police report saying this guy was going to kill you and then marry him a year later and not have not one but three children and then leave them essentially with a guy who she knew had been convicted of a crime. I have a vibe that she wasn't just the sweet, loving mother that, you know, that we see. Listen, I'm sorry if she's been murdered, obviously, but I think she was kind of a complicated person. I think it's very odd to go ahead and marry a guy like that and have three kids and then leave the kids with him during the week.
Civil lawsuits are all about someone suing for money. I'm interested in someone going to jail for life for the murder of Anna Walsh. Will that be Brian Walsh? He says he's innocent. We wait as justice unfolds. Goodbye, friend.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.